All right, good morning, happy Monday. Welcome into the show, Bill Ryder with you. We have so many things to get to. I'm really excited about our guest today. Herm Edwards is going to be on the program. And I don't know if I'll bring this up when he's with us. Let me think about it for an hour. You can prod me if you'd like at 888-710-4ISN or on X Sports Ryder, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. When I worked at the Kansas City Star, and Herm Edwards was the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, I was sent to his home. It was a condo in the plaza in Kansas City when he was fired to get a comment from him. And I, some would say, snuck into that building and just hung out outside his front door and knocked on it for hours. He never showed up. I've never told him that story. He probably won't remember me from those days. But I don't know, maybe we'll find out. We'll definitely talk a lot of football with Herm. He is a great guy, and we're going to have him on an hour. Can't wait. We'll talk some big 12 underway. Let's go, Iowa State. A little Cyclone magic over in, I almost went Irish accent. I didn't do it. It's a Monday. It's early. Over in Ireland. Top of the morning to you. That's terrible. All right, we'll work on it. Aaron Rodgers. Ugh. We'll just get into his flirtation with my worst nightmare. We will do five things you need to know in college football. It's kicked off, baby. I know the big games this weekend, but we're here. It's happening. Let's go. We'll do buy or sell. We'll check in with Ryan Hickey. We'll take your phone calls. Again, phone number 888-710-4ISN. And let's get into the Shedeur Sanders bath of toxicity. The water is raging, but it's warm. Let's get in there. If you missed this, everybody lost their minds over the weekend. People just went crazy on every side of this thing. Short version, Shedeur played in the preseason game and he played like total garbage. Longer version. He had five drives that he was allowed to do in the second half. He was six for 14 yards. He was sacked five times. He fumbled. He only gained a single first down. He was not allowed the opportunity, oh, God forbid, to do the two-minute drill. And there became this narrative and counter-narrative idea, this argument out there that Kevin Stefanski and the Cleveland Browns are intentionally, as part of a conspiracy theory, I didn't catch if they're in the Illuminati or not, I'm not sure if that's part of the deal, intentionally undermining Shedeur Sanders so he cannot succeed. I will get into all of it. I will play the various voices that are representing the echo chambers that are screaming at each other. But let me tell you something that is critically important here. Shedeur Sanders isn't promised anything. Shedeur Sanders is a fifth-round draft pick. If there's an unfairness to Shedeur Sanders, and I don't think that there is, if there's a setup to fail for Shedeur Sanders, if there's a world in which the National Football League has not recognized his clear potential quarterbacking genius and put him in a position to not be celebrated and successful the way that he should be, that happened in the NFL draft many, many, many weeks ago when he fell, and 32 teams passed on him till one took him in the fifth round, after drafting a quarterback ahead of him, Dillon Gabriel, in the third round. That's it. That's the story. That's the deal. And while any NFL head coach wants to get the best out of every single player on their roster, that is the cliche that will throw you, the fact is everybody and their mom thinks they belong on these teams. The job of the head coach is to figure out who does. And if you're a fifth-round pick at any position, you're not guaranteed anything. It is not the coach's job to turn a fifth-round selection at quarterback, where he is, just by virtue of where he was taken in the draft, the fourth QB in the mix. They have Flacco. They have Pickett. Those guys are, at least at the start of training camp, earmarked for actual slot one, slot two roles in the quarterback room on the depth chart. And when Dillon Gabriel's drafted ahead of you, it is not Stefanski's job to turn Shedeur Sanders into a quarterback in the NFL. It is, because of where he was drafted, Shedeur Sanders' job to turn himself into a quarterback in Stefanski's eyes. And you can yell at me, and you can don't drive off the road, and you can pull over, and you can get mad. Well, he's supposed to get the best out. Yeah, sure. But that goes to Dylan Gabriel first. Of course he's going to get better opportunities. Of course he's going to play with better football players. Of course they're going to put him in a better position to be successful. They drafted him two rounds ahead of Shadur. That's the reality. That's the promise. And this isn't Shadur's fault, by the way. Not really. I think he's handled himself really impressively in terms of navigating the ridiculous amount of attention that has been foisted upon him. Look, the National Football League is in the business of success. They don't care about anything else about you. This isn't about fame. It isn't about race. It isn't about stature. It isn't about, you know, ego. This is about they, and really the NFL, don't think Shadur is good enough. Could they all be wrong? Of course they could be wrong. They were wrong about Tom Brady. I don't think he's Tom Brady. I don't think he's Tom Brady. They were wrong about Brock Purdy. I'm not sure he's at a place where you can be Brock Purdy. I don't think that can happen with the Cleveland Browns. But there's no conspiracy here. There's no attempt to have a successful guy be a failure. The odds against Shadur Sanders were stacked against him the moment he got drafted in the fifth round. The moment day one came and went and his name wasn't called, his reality was going to be more difficult than he thought it was going to be. And look, again, I think he's handling it pretty well for somebody who was told to believe that he was going to be a superstar quarterback in the NFL, and he finds himself in this position. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to find out whether he makes this team, and he probably will. They cut one of their random quarterbacks, Tyler Huntley. I guess I should say your name because we're not going to think about you ever again. But the fact is, and you know this, but I'm going to tell you, the Browns have to keep four quarterbacks on their roster, their actual NFL roster, for Shadur to probably make this team. Because to move him to the practice team, he is good enough or there's enough upside that somebody else will take. And that's how that works. You go to the practice squad and you're no longer guaranteed to be a member of that football team. And so it's not as simple as, oh, let's just put Shadur in the practice squad and he'll grow into the job. He will. He'll grow into the job somewhere else. He'll grow into the job with another NFL team. And again, this is the last rational thing you're going to hear on this topic. Here's Shadur afterwards being asked, and again, he was garbage. He was awful. He did not play well. Doesn't matter his offensive line or the other receivers or what position he was put in. You're the fourth quarterback on the depth chart. You're taken in the fifth round. Your job is to make it work. And it was a reasonable question when he was asked, do you think you're going to make this team?
Obviously. I think overall as a player, I feel like I put in the work. I feel like everything I do, you know, I try to do it to my best, and that's all I asked for. So I feel like everybody feels like, you know, they should be on the team. You know, and it's, if you ask anybody on the team, would they feel like they belong, you know, in their own eyes. So I feel like I do.
This is where the story should end, and this is where the story got crazy. I'm not sure how many of you like the Kingsman movies. It's about an English blue-collar lad who becomes a spy, and he's trained to sound like he's rich, and then he fights everybody in these crazy action sequences. And the second one, the one starring Samuel L. Jackson, they have this sound, I think it is, that turns everybody mad. Everyone goes crazy and starts attacking each other. Shadur Sanders is a sports version of that scene, where everyone's just going crazy and going after each other for no reason. Emory Hunt's a nice guy. We've had him on the show. CBS Sports HQ analyst. Knows the game, played the game. And he, a little more professionally, I think, a little more rationally, represented a large swath of football fandom and prognostication that over the last 24 hours decided that this was an act of perhaps intentional incompetence or strategy by the Browns to undermine Shadur Sanders.
Kevin Stefanski handled that situation and this whole quarterback competition horribly because you removed an opportunity for him to redeem himself in that situation to go out as a winner. It's all about Kevin Stefanski's ego. We saw this with Baker Mayfield. Oh, it doesn't fit my system. Well, your system has to be about the players that are in it. And we've seen him do this because the offense was completely different when Dylan Gabriel was out there. It was a lot of, you know, short, quick passes to get the ball out of his hands, spread the formation, which is great. That's what you're supposed to do for a guy that thrives in that situation. So I don't know why, for Shadur, the offense changed.
Almost every word he said is wrong, by the way. Almost every single thing that he said there is incorrect. First of all, This is a Browns team. The idea that the Browns would undermine any quarterback who has the potential to lead them is ridiculous. This is an organization that gave $500 million almost to Deshaun Watson, guaranteed, and changed the framework of how quarterbacks are paid. Didn't work, by the way, because in their desperation for a QB. Baker Mayfield went away in large part because that guy came in and there just wasn't a place for him. I mean, none of this even makes sense, what this guy is saying and what everybody is saying. Do you know who Shedeur Sanders is? And this is more about the gravitational pull of the expectations and what people attach to him than his football talent. Although maybe this is commensurate there, too. I don't know. We haven't seen enough. He's Tim Tebow. He is a modern-day Tim Tebow, where the interest he generates for those of you like me that love sports is much clearer and higher and certain than the benefits he actually gives a football team. Tim Tebow couldn't make it in the NFL, wasn't good enough. And Tim Tebow is probably, at least when he went to the NFL, maybe not anymore, but he might be the greatest college football player, at least quarterback, in the history of the sport. He really might be. And he wasn't good enough. Sometimes it doesn't work. The transition doesn't work. And this became such a rabid conversation. Stefanski's after Shedeur. Stefanski did it on purpose. He undermined him. You heard Emery there doing that a little bit. And Josiah Anderson, who's a former colleague, a lot of people who are credible and have platforms, went to this place of making the claim that this is an attempt by Stefanski to destroy or ruin or undermine, whether through an intentional conspiracy or incompetence, the ability of Shedeur Sanders to be successful. And this got so over the top that a reporter had to ask Kevin Stefanski, the head coach of the Browns, who's trying to figure out a lot of other things about the narrative. That's a nice way to put it. When people basically think you're a moron or a bad person, the narrative that they are undermining their fifth-round draft pick quarterback.
I'm committed to his development, just like all of our rookies. So we'll continue to focus on getting our guys better. And that's what we'll stay committed to, and that's what's important to me.
Shedeur Sanders has promised nothing. That's where we are. That's the deal. He's not good enough so far to win the job. Now, the best thing that I've seen on this over the weekend came from Jason Lloyd, who's an athletic reporter covering the Browns and the rest of the NFL. And this is what reminds me of Tim Tebow, because Tim Tebow won a playoff game for the Denver Broncos when that wasn't an easy thing to do. And Tim Tebow had a unique skill set that didn't quite fit into the reality of control freak offensive coordinators and head coaches who can't get things wrong at the quarterback position or lose their jobs. And if you lose your job, we have a guy coming up in an hour, Herm Edwards. If you lose your job and you deserve another one, sometimes you don't get one. The pressure is massive. And so an unusual quarterback who doesn't quite fit the scheme that you want to run is not a head coach being an idiot. It's a head coach not being sure it's going to work and that's going to ruin everything he's worked toward. That was Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow probably should have played in the NFL, even as a backup. But he couldn't because the gravitational pull of all the noise outweighed, was more destructive than whatever benefits there were of having him in a quarterback room. And the real failure, as I've said, for Shedeur, the real moment the deck was stacked against him, fair or not fair, didn't come this weekend when the Browns took their fourth-string quarterback and let him do a little bit of football in the second half and he didn't stand up to that massive difficulty. It came when he got drafted in the fifth round. It came when 31 other teams passed on him 1, 2, 3, 4, in most cases 5 times. That's when Shedeur Sanders' career became this long shot. And Jason Lloyd, did I say Alexander? That's the guy from Seinfeld. Jason Lloyd, from The Athletic, wrote this, and it smacked me as the most rational thing that I've seen. This is from Jason. We are witnessing why 31 teams pass on Shedeur multiple times. The conspiracy theory sabotage stuff is absurd. He just isn't good enough yet and isn't ready to be a starting quarterback. Teams saw that early and wanted no part of this nonsense. It's not any more complicated than that. Now, there's one more complication, and this is where Shedeur has been set up to fail, and so has Kevin Stefanski, and so have all of the people who are going mad, losing their minds, and sounding like the actual idiots trying to argue that the Browns are out to get Shedeur Sanders, or that Stefanski is. And that is almost certainly Stefanski didn't want Shedeur Sanders, and neither did the front office, because they already had enough quarterbacks, and the owner of the Browns, who's done this before, who did this with Johnny Manziel, who did this with Deshaun Watson, came in and said, we're drafting this guy. He's still there. He's shiny. This is this toy. It could work. I want to play at GM. Kevin Stefanski and the front office very well, probably evaluated Shedeur, thought he might have some upside. They knew they were in a position where Joe Flacco starts, right? This is probably the plan on draft day. Flacco starts, and remember, I know Flacco's old. Flacco 2 years ago came into the Browns off of an injury for somebody else and was comeback player of the year. Stefanski was coach of the year, one of the two times that he's done that, and they were a really surprisingly good football team. That kind of trust, that kind of security blanket for a head coach in the NFL, for the reasons I just said, is critical. So they go, okay, we got Flacco. We'll see how he does. We've got Kenny Pickett as a backup. That's a reason, not a superstar, but a reasonable backup. And we're going to evaluate and find our quarterback of the future, and he'll be able to come in, and we'll be able to develop him slowly. The better way to do it. No pressure. Not a lot of attention on him. He'll be a third-round pick. And maybe they evaluated Shedeur just behind Dylan Gabriel. I don't know. You don't know. Maybe they did. But they thought Dylan Gabriel had more upside and had more ability in this plan where you already have somebody else. And again, if you're the Browns and you have a history of ruining quarterbacks, it might make sense to say to yourself if the evaluation's close, you know, the attention Shedeur is going to bring is going to be bad for us. It's also going to be bad for Shedeur in this context, in this mixture. So they go with Dylan Gabriel, and then the owner, almost certainly, I'm speculating, but almost certainly, if it quacks like a duck and it swims like a duck, and it's got feathers like a duck, and it's got a beak like a duck, it's not a goose, all right? Almost certainly this owner reached out and said, now you bring him in. And it became toxic. Same ownership that ruined the Browns and Johnny Manziel, same ownership that ruined the Browns with Deshaun Watson, have put everyone in a position to fail. But that's not Kevin Stefanski's fault. That's his problem to fix. It's not Stefanski's job to turn a fifth-round draft pick who's a quarterback, who commands a lot of attention from people like you and people like me, into a quarterback who starts now. It is that quarterback's job to sell Stefanski on that notion. You think, go back a few years ago when Trey Lance was competing against people, that Brock Purdy was given every opportunity to succeed? You think Brock Purdy walked in there and said, you need to make me... It was the other way around. You have to... You got to play with the four stringers and the third stringers and work your way to the second stringers. And you have to be great at every step of the way. And Shedeur hasn't been. Shedeur has promised nothing. Nothing. I want him to be successful. I'm rooting for the guy. I hope he makes it. But this isn't some vast conspiracy. It is proof that people have lost their ability in America in 2025 to do any kind of critical thinking. So shame on all the conspiracy theorists who want to make it about something else. This is about football. And while Shedeur may be good enough, he has not proven that to the Browns. As a fifth-round quarterback who's afforded nothing, he has not done enough to earn that opportunity. The question isn't whether Stefanski's sabotaging him or not. The question is whether this fifth-round draft pick is going to make the team. And by the way, the fact the Browns are even halfway willing to carry a fourth quarterback, and that quarterback will be Shedeur, speaks either to their willingness to invest in him and or to an owner who's got to get out of the way. But regardless, Shedeur's getting more opportunities than most quarterbacks would because of who he is. And he hasn't earned it yet, and I hope he does. But let's just stop. Let's just stop on this Stefanski wasn't fair to him. This is football. It's not tiddlywinks. He's a fifth-round draft pick, and everybody's acting real silly. 888-710-4ISN, phone number. 888-710-4ISN. By the way, you can have a totally different opinion. If you want to call in, if you can be respectful, I love it. Tell me why I'm right. Tell me why I'm wrong. It's all good. Is Shedeur Sanders being mistreated? The short answer is no. But 888-710-4ISN if you have a different perspective. We'll take some calls if you want to do that. And I want to get into the beauty and the magic of meaningful football being back. It was in Ireland, but that's fine. We'll get into it next year. I'm Righter Than You.
You're listening to the Righter Than You podcast. Welcome back to Righter Than You.
I've never seen a swing sweeter than Seager's. I'm a lefty, so I kind of related to him at the plate. They're gone, and the Dodgers are just fine. I had a nice little swing, David. I should have had just count me in 94.
I'm picturing Ken Griffey Jr. when you say a nice little swing, and I'm then picturing that you and I are in media and not on the baseball field. So I'm questioning, Bill, whether your swing was actually that sweet.
Well, it was not as sweet as I thought it was, because here I am, David Sampson.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. I did have a nice swing. I had a real bad arm, though. Every manager tried to get me to pitch. Like, I can't, I don't know. Is that a knuckleball? No, I just can't throw the ball more than 20 miles per hour. It's a feat of physics, but it's the wrong kind. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Hello, Ryan Hickey. How are you? How was your weekend?
Good morning, Bill. It was fun. Nice little fantasy draft for some of my home friends, so that was nice. Made some big-time draft picks that hopefully won't blow up in my face.
You drafted Josh Allen, ironically, with your first pick.
In the first round.
The guy that you routinely disrespect, and the fine people of the greater Buffalo area tend to tend to be bemused by you.
And so I've already made at least three different trade proposals to one of my friends who drafted Caleb Williams. He's rejected all three so far.
Sure.
But I'm trying to get Caleb Williams for Josh Allen in fantasy. So that way when it works out right, I will show everyone that, hey, it worked in fantasy. It's going to work in real life, too. I'm not giving up on it.
If you're in Iowa or Alabama or out here in California, you may not understand what's going on. But I promise our friends in Rochester are laughing. And they understand what's happening. This is one of the worst takes of all time. This Shador thing is just, you know who it's unfair to, maybe first and foremost, is to Shador Sanders, because all of this noise and all of this furor and all of this silliness, and it's almost people are now foaming at the mouth on both sides of this stupid argument. It's most destructive to Shador Sanders, because if he does not make the roster, if he gets moved to the practice squad, the right situation, the correct in a vacuum move would be one of the other 31 teams. Okay, you know what? Yeah, sure. Let's go pick him up. We have room on our team. He can be a third stringer. We can have this sort of free, low-risk project. And in a vacuum, you would do that. But the attention, the maelstrom of focus and anger, and Kevin Stefanski being called basically a bad human being because he won't give him a starting job, that will deter other teams from bringing him in. And if you remember, Tebow's last real chance in the National Football League came at the height of the Patriots' power, when Belichick was untouchable, when it was viewed as the best culture in the sport, when there was obviously no notion that Tebow was going to win the job. And I remember thinking, if he can't make it here, if it's not, no one else will take him. Belichick can take him. The Patriots can take him. Bobby Cakes, who owns the team, can take him. And he still didn't make it. And the attention still wasn't worth it. So for all of you out there who think you're doing Shador Sanders a big old favor by screaming or yelling or bemoaning or being frustrated or making accusations, you're actually doing the opposite. You're doing the opposite. And that's not fair to Shador Sanders. It's not fair to anybody involved, but I know a lot of you don't care about Kevin Stefanski. Look, it's Stefanski, and this is the other thing that I love about these topics, is we get into these side conversations, because is Stefanski an amazing coach? Some people have gone out there and pointed out two-time coach of the year. He's been called an offensive guru. And then other people have countered, yeah, he's had one top five offense, one, in his tenure. I will just say this. I and most of you would take Stefanski as your head coach tomorrow if we had a job opening. He might have one of the three worst jobs in football. Let me rephrase that. Kevin Stefanski might be one of the three worst run organizations in the National Football League. I mean, the Browns are on the list. The Cowboys, I think, top the list today. And then I guess you could argue, Ryan, I think the Bears are still on that list. I will believe that they're off that list when they prove it. The Commanders are obviously no longer on that list. Anybody I'm missing? I mean, the Jets are on that list. The Giants.
They haven't figured out in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, the Jets are probably ahead of the Bears, maybe. All right, so I love how we just run out of time. Shador Sanders taking all the oxygen out of the room. Very, very quickly, Iowa State won over Kansas State this weekend. It was a really good football game. Did you drink Guinness while you watched it? I meant to, but I didn't.
I did not drink Guinness.
It was real early. I may have missed the first quarter. It was real early out here. Here's the thing. Iowa State won. Really big win. Congratulations. People were mad. Dads and sons were fighting each other. We'll talk about that later. Some crazy stuff going on. It was just beautiful to have real college football back that's meaningful. And while the Big Ten's going for their third consecutive national championship, and the SEC's trying to get back to that very, very top of the mountain, and probably almost certainly the odds are very significantly high that whoever wins the whole thing this year is going to come from either the Big Ten or the SEC, The Big 12 is really interesting. Maybe I have this not-so-secret hope that a conference out there that is not one of the Big Two can somehow muscle their way to enough respectability that over a 2 or 3 or 4 year timeline, because it won't happen overnight, they'll get a few more recruits, they'll get a few more great coaches, somebody will break through, and maybe we'll have a third conference that, if not the Big Ten of the SEC, can at least compete with a team or two in the college football playoff. And I think the Big 12 would be that conference if we can get there. There are 7 teams that were ranked in the AP poll top 30 from the Big 12 at the start of the season. Not as many as the SEC, who has 10, but as many as the Big Ten. Same number. Those teams expected to compete. Remember, last year the Big 12 came down to basically the last week. Colorado had, an opportunity to win their last 2 regular season games, and they would have gotten themselves into a position if they'd won then the Big 12 championship game. They would have been the college football playoff. It's good for the sport. Baylor, Arizona State, Utah, Iowa State, Kansas State, even though they lost, Texas Tech, could all be pretty interesting. And it's hard to know because 5 of the 6 schools have returning quarterbacks, and so in theory there's a higher ceiling there and they can make a leap and they can make a jump, but they were also sort of closely aligned. Returning starters by school this year. Baylor's got 18 back, Utah has 17, Iowa State had 13, Arizona State 17, Texas Tech 21. K-State was the low man on the totem pole there with 10. So it might, and they, by the way, they played a really good football game. It was a very close game. So just, I know we're going to focus, and I will too, and we should. We're going to focus on the SEC. We're going to focus on the Big Ten. We're going to talk about Texas, Ohio State for 4 weeks in a row, even after the game's over. Probably Arch Manning's going to be amazing. The Big 12 has the potential to be really interesting. And Iowa State doesn't scream national champion. Kansas State should, because of the Bill Snyder sort of residual glow, but they don't either, and I know they lost. But keep an eye on the Big 12. They could be interesting. They could be fun. We'll do picks later this week. Do you have any idea, Ryan? You don't have to say who it is, but who you would take out of the Big 12? Because I know who I'm going to take as the top teams in each conference, other than the Big 12, where I feel like I just got to pull a name out of a hat.
Which will probably lend your pick to be more correct than mine. I feel pretty confident, which is, I think, dangerous in that conference where it's so unpredictable. And so I have a lean, but history says that lean is not going to come true.
You're taking Colorado. I can tell.
Deion Sanders back, baby.
I love where your head's at. Can I just very quickly, I just want to get this out of the way, really quickly, and then we'll move on. Aaron Rodgers was on, was this Cam Hayward's podcast?
Yes,
not just football? Can you not just let Aaron Rodgers say the words that he said? I don't like Aaron Rodgers. I'm tired of Aaron Rodgers. I'm tired of hearing about everything's about peace and love and rainbows and puppy dogs, and he plays football to balance the universe. I don't think he's good enough. We're going to find out. But just, can we not please, this is DK Metcalf talking, can we not please try to prod Aaron Rodgers into giving us another year of his drama?
You know, a lot of people may be looking at us like, oh, what are they going to do? It's a big question mark. But, you know, they can just wait and see what we do, because I think we're going to do some special things this year. Looking forward to it. And, you know, maybe we can run it back.
Maybe. Wow, you got him at a maybe?
I told you it's just a massage. Massage.
Here's the thing. I don't want to belabor this very long. I think he's going to be bad. I think he's going to be ineffective. Ineffective is probably a more accurate description of what I think is going to happen. I could be wrong. And the problem with this clip is it makes me realize that if the Steelers win 11 games, and if Aaron Rodgers completes 66% of his passes and throws 28 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions, and they run the ball a bunch, and they win a playoff game, he's coming back, isn't he? God help me. All right. Cool. Can't wait for that. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Let's get into 5 things you need to know about college football after we get a sports update from one of the highest-ranked Infinity Sports Network hosts of all time, Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Hey, Bill, your Sports Flash is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. After 8 straight losses, including the first 3 games of their weekend series, the Yankees finally beat the Red Sox again last night 7-2. Aaron Boone will take what he can get.
Definitely not the weekend we wanted to have, especially coming off a really good road trip, and but a good win, you know, nonetheless.
The Yankee manager got two homers apiece from Trent Grisham and Jazz Chisholm. The Yanks remain third in the AL East, a half game now behind the Sox, who are five games off the pace of the Blue Jays. Michigan football is expected to finally, officially name five-star freshman Bryce Underwood their starting QB today. Underwood will debut this weekend against New Mexico, then go to Oklahoma in week two. Nafisa Collier with 32 points and 9 rebounds after missing 7 games with an ankle injury. She and the Lynx took care of the shorthanded fever 97-84. And Novak Djokovic and Jessica Pegula straight set wins on night one of the U.S. Open. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
They're going to have to either find a captain to pilot this boat, to steer. Do you pilot a boat? Captain a boat? Sail the boat?
Captain a boat.
The captain captains the boat?
Captain captains the boat.
They got a new captain that's got to captain the boat or change direction. It's a lot going on here on the show.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. Didn't we have a boat joke about you back in the day, back when the show was on at night?
Yes, yes. I loved Yacht Rock and would always be on a boat.
Did you like Yacht Rock?
No.
I love Yacht Rock. I'm here for all the Yacht Rock.
I'm sure it's good. Yeah.
I was sitting at a bar last night with a buddy having a quick drink, and Johnny Damon came on the TV as part of some documentary. Have you seen Johnny Damon lately?
I have. I saw a video of him from Yankees Old Timers Day like a month ago.
He looks like a 1970s rock star who's just chilling.
He does.
It looks good, though.
Looks like he's enjoying being Johnny Damon.
Hair's down to his shoulders.
It is long.
It's long.
Letting it go. Good for him. He's not on the Yankees anymore. Don't have to worry about cutting it. Cutting the beard. He can do whatever he wants.
That's a dumb rule.
I agree.
What if the Infinity Sports Network had that rule? Because you have a beard. You're bearded. You're bearded up.
I do. Oh, boy. No long hair and no beard. What would I do?
I would grow out my fro. Because I don't think. You might have to quit.
I think my fiance would dump me if I didn't have a beard. I'm pretty ugly without it.
Is that what she told you?
I just assume that.
Okay.
So I may have to get a new job if they ever instituted that.
Pretty exciting news. One of our colleagues followed me on X after 10 years over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't a policy beforehand to follow everyone that works at the network, you know, coworkers.
No,
coworkers.
I was pretty like, oh, that's weird.
Hmm.
He just discovered that I work here.
Hey, sometimes, you know, better late than never.
Very nice.
10 years delayed.
5 things you need to know about this network. Bill Ryder works here. Who knew? No, just kidding. 5 things. We'll do this now. It's time for 5 things you need to know going into the 2025 college football season.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are 5 things you need to know. Number one.
Let's start here, Bill. I think the biggest word that will highlight 2025 season, new. Of the top 10 Ooh. Teams entering the season,
okay.
6 have first-time starting quarterbacks, and 12 of the preseason top 25 teams have a different starting quarterback than last season. Some of the big names under center this year include Texas's Arch Manning, Michigan's Bryce Underwood, Ohio State's Julian Sayin, Miami's Carson Beck, and Oklahoma's John Mateer.
There's some good potential players in there.
Oh, yeah.
Bryce Underwood has the second best name of the group, right after Arch Manning, because it's a Manning. Bryce Underwood. Sounds like a cowboy. Gunslinger.
Undertaker, too, maybe can kind of work in there.
Do you think one of this year's Heisman Trophy winners will be among the list of people whose names you just read?
I'm going to say no.
Really? Who's your favorite for Heisman Trophy this year?
I would say Clemson's Cade Klubnik.
I am down on Clemson.
Okay. Is one of your Heisman favorites?
Yeah.
In this pool of, was it 5 names?
So I think Arch Manning's going to get a lot of the benefit of the doubt if he plays really well and or Texas is the best team in America. I mean, dude, if they beat Ohio State and he throws 3 touchdown passes, right, he's going to be the front runner. Those things change week to week. And I'm really interested in seeing what Underwood could do.
Let's then get to
number two.
Because we'll talk about the Heisman Trophy first. Why not? It's a all big right. one. I think it's going to be really interesting. To no surprise, even though he's yet to, well, I guess he's taking technically two starts, but still, as a full-time starter, yet to really kind of take a hold of the reins, Arch Manning enters this year, Bill, as he's betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. Right behind him is Clemson's clubbing, as you just mentioned. He looks to build off a big year. Had 36 passing touchdowns last year for Clemson. Now, LSU's Garrett Nussmeier, Ohio State wide receiver Jeremiah Smith, the only non-quarterback in the top five, and Penn State's Drew Aller round out the top five, at least preseason favorites, to win the Heisman Trophy.
So number six is clearly Iowa's quarterback. He just missed the list.
So close.
What is your confidence level on Drew Aller? Because I have none. I have no confidence whatsoever in Penn State. Zero. I mean, I don't believe in James Franklin at all. Can you put your fandom aside, or you include your fandom with a little bit of professional, I guess, put a little professionalism in there?
Yes, I can. So in terms of, like, if you're looking at it from a Heisman race, at least specifically first, I would not touch him at all. Because I think Penn State's going to run the ball a lot. They ran the ball like 60% of the time last year. They have the best running back room in the country. I would say probably if you're Penn State, less is more. Run the ball, throw off of that. So you're not going to have some big-time numbers, which means you're not going to probably be in the Heisman race. And I think that's, like, I like Drew Aller. He's not proven it yet to come through in a big game. And I think he's kind of one of those quarterbacks where if you can get the run going first and take a loop off his plate, that's where you can get him at his best.
If Arch Manning wins the Heisman Trophy this year,
mm-hmm.
will he be a bigger story than Tebow or Shador whenever he enters the National Football League? I am going to say 1,000% yes. I'll go so far to say it's because of the time that we're in and the name on his back, he'll be as big of a story as Tebow plus Shador Sanders.
I think he would blow Shador out of the water. The only thing I'm struggling with Tebow is just, at least he was there for 4 years, and like it was kind of like a buildup, and we saw
him
play.
There was a cult of personality around him.
Right.
He's the best college football quarterback of all time for me.
I would agree with that.
Most accomplished, whatever sort of semantics you want to roll with. The thing is, we live in a time now, and the Shador story shows this, people aren't reasonable or rational. So it'll be the Shador narrative power plus the excellence of a Manning winning the Heisman Trophy coming out of Texas. I think it'll be Caitlin Clark levels of craziness.
Let me just ask you this. Does time impact this at all? Because, again, we saw for Caitlin Clark, right, 3 years at Iowa. For Tim Tebow.
But I don't think she really – yeah, but I don't think – she was more of a storyline. She really burst through in her last year in terms of being a crossover story, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like, if Archer's there for – let's say he wins the Heisman and then goes to the NFL draft after this year.
Yeah, I think it's still the same thing. Because part of that – I mean, you don't have to beat Ohio State this weekend to win the Heisman Trophy, but that would help, right? Mm-hmm. If they beat Ohio State, I think he's going to be the biggest sports story in America until he stumbles. And if he wins the Heisman, he's not going to stumble.
Right.
And so I think it'll build much more quickly. I think it'll be exponential in the speed with which he becomes, again, Caitlin Clark levels of like the Beatles when they came to America, which I wasn't here for, but I've heard was amazing.
Number three.
So how about this, Bill? The Big Ten Conference is looking to do something this season it hasn't done in over 80 years. Win three straight national championships. Last two reigning champs, Michigan 2023, Ohio State 2024, and entering 2025, three of the top eight teams with the best odds to win the title this year are Big Ten teams. Now, just to compare against the SEC, the last time the SEC went three or more years without winning a national title, 1999 to 2002.
That is a great stat. I did not know that about the Big Ten. Never?
And two of the three teams, or two teams in that three-year span won. Minnesota won two national titles in that three-year span. Ohio State won the other one.
So, I'm actually not making fun of you this time. That's a lot on Penn State's shoulders. That's a lot to say. It's hard. It's just, the game is cyclical. It would also be remarkable if the Big Ten won three consecutive national titles and they did it with three different programs. If that happens, they will have easily supplanted the SEC as the, not just the dominant conference, they've already done that in the short term. I think you can make the case that they are now the new power. If you get Michigan, Ohio State, and then Penn State winning national champion, man, for that reason alone, I might have to root for Penn State. For real.
Okay. Okay, we're slowly turning the ship around.
What about Michigan at 35-1? What about Iowa at 150-1? I'll stop.
Number four.
You're just moving on. Well, don't blame me.
Numerous head coaches, Bill, will be massive stories this season, led by UNC's Bill Belichick, who a week from today makes his college football coaching debut as the Tar Heels take on TCU. Other coaches under the spotlight this year include LSU's Brian Kelly, who's trying to get the Tigers back to their first college football playoff appearance since 2019. As we just mentioned, James Franklin trying to finally win the big game. And you have coaches like Florida's Billy Napier, Auburn's Hugh Freeze, Florida State's Mike Norvell, and Wisconsin's Luke Fickell that are trying to coach themselves off the hot seat this season.
Man, there's so much going on, it's hard to even remember sometimes about Bill Belichick, but he'll obviously be front and center. Who makes it longer, Lion Kelly or the hoodie?
I think the hoodie in part, because I think there's if LSU misses the playoff this year, and now they're 0-4, I think there's a chance he's fired.
Directly into my veins.
Lion
he
Kelly.
Leaves. Notre Dame is basically a perennial college football playoff power. He leaves them for LSU in the lurch, and he fails. Put it directly into my veins.
Number five.
And let's finish this, Bill. The first month of the college football season has some monster non-conference matchups. I obviously highlighted by Ohio State, Texas, that big showdown in the Shoe on Saturday. Other big games include your boy Lion Kelly going to take on Clemson on Saturday night. You have Alabama, Florida State, Miami, Notre Dame. In 2 weeks, you have Michigan, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M taking on Notre Dame.
You did your hot take thing recently where you said LSU Clemson was a more important game or a bigger game. Or
intriguing.
The best game of
I'm
all
more
time,
intrigued and excited intriguing. For that game.
I'm not going to go that far, but can I tell you that I think low key, potentially, Michigan or Oklahoma is one of the most fascinating games for me, because if Oklahoma fails again this year, and they were bad last year, you could actually, and I'm obsessed with this topic, they could be the new Nebraska. Oklahoma winning 4 or 5 games this year, just not being a good football team, not being a competitive football team, they're done. I think the currents will have swept them past any sort of ability to clutch on to what they used to be. And that Michigan team is a really interesting question mark. It's hard to know what they're going to be. It's hard to know what they're going to do. We'll have a lot better sense of it in 5 or 6 weeks. If it turns out Michigan's really, really good or Oklahoma's really, really bad, we'll get our first glimpse of that. And maybe the first step in Oklahoma permanently becoming an also-ran in that game. And it's hard to keep up with all the storylines, but you go back to when Lincoln Riley went to USC. I mean, it was inconceivable that would be the case. They were a blue blood program. Quarterback U, Heisman Trophy U. World comes at you fast sometimes. All right. So does Herm Edwards, because he's coming at you right now to talk some football on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening. Very excited to welcome on Herm Edwards, ESPN NFL analyst, host of Herm's Game Plan, where he breaks down the latest news in the National Football League, former head coach at Arizona State, longtime former NFL head coach. He will not remember me, but when I was a young reporter at the Kansas City Star, we overlapped a little bit on X at Herm Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good morning. Thanks for making time.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on your show. I recall our conversations, so I still have my memory, believe it or not.
Herm Edwards hanging out with us. Herm, the big story of the day is Shedeur Sanders. Take it wherever you want, but I'm curious if, from your vantage point, if you think he's gotten a fair shake from the Browns.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you know, I used to tell players, and I say this not as a coach, but as a player, I always looked at it this way. Coaches coach and players play. And at the end of the day, when you get on the field, you're writing your resume as a football player. And it doesn't make any difference how many plays you play. When you're on the field, that's your resume. And that's how you get evaluated. So I think right now, if you were true to yourself, see, you would say this. we know Joe Flacco's going to be the starting quarterback. Now, who's the number two? Is it Gabriel or is it Shador? When I watched it unfold right now in the preseason, if you're looking at preseason play, Shador is number three. Gabriel played better than him. But here's the problem the Cleveland Browns have. They have a quarterback in Shador Sanders that is a celebrity. So when you have a celebrity quarterback that's not the starter, guess what? He makes news. We talk about him. That's what you do. You talk about the celebrity quarterback that's not playing. And that's what we're doing right now.
Herm, I was thinking exactly in that context, Herm Edwards here on the show, I'm Bill Ryder, about Tim Tebow and how he was a celebrity even after he stopped being, fair or not fair, a starting quarterback in the NFL. And some people around Tebow would tell you that that limited his opportunities as he needed second or third chances. Do you think if and when Shedeur Sanders doesn't work out in Cleveland, that he will not be afforded the same opportunities that maybe another quarterback of his talents would be because his celebrity could bring what is not, you know, which is too much noise, the juice won't be worth the squeeze to head coaches across the league who just don't want to deal with it.
Well, if you look at him and you're saying, you know, he has a chance to be our starting quarterback, no, he will get some opportunities. And I don't think by any stretch of imagination, look, he's a rookie quarterback. As we know, this league is always looking for quarterbacks. So if it doesn't work out in Cleveland for some reason, he'll get another opportunity. But you're right. I mean, his name, Sanders, and him being a celebrity and then playing the position, the number one position in football that everyone's looking for, the quarterback position, that brings on the conversation, right? And it just manifests itself. And you can do nothing about it. And you have to sit there and go, okay, how do we deal with this as an organization? But if Shedeur is true to himself, he would probably look at his play and go, you know, I forced some things. I was trying to. It was almost he was trying too hard when he got in the game. He started holding the ball again. He took some bad sacks. And look, we can blame it on the line. We can blame it on a lot of different things. But at the end of the day, I always say this. There's an eye test. What do your eyes tell you? If you didn't know his name, if you didn't put a jersey number on the back and go, just go play, who played the best? That's what you got to look at. That's how you make your decision.
Herm Edwards here on the show. Herm, you know a thing or two about Jaden Daniels. Maybe you weren't surprised by his excellence last year. I certainly was. I mean, not that I didn't think he could be great, but he was exceptional as a rookie. What did you see from him in college when you were coaching him that maybe led you to know more than people like me what he was capable of very, very quickly in the NFL?
He has the it factor. He has the it factor. And I talked to him every Saturday last year before he played. And it's not too big for him. It wasn't too big for him when we had him at Arizona State and I started him as a freshman. I can remember walking in the room, in the offensive meeting room, and we had about four or five quarterbacks, and we had a senior and a couple other guys. And after about a week or so of practicing, I told coaches, I said, five's a starter. And they said, well, coach? I said, yeah, he's a starter. I said, at the end of the day, I said, the only thing he doesn't have is experience. And the only way you get it is play. I said, he's going to have to play. He's going to play as a freshman. Just put him out there. He'll be fine. And you watch him mature. And then from there, you know, when I left, he went to LSU. And you watched him. He wins the Heisman. And then obviously Washington drafts him. And I told him, I said, you're probably going to get drafted by Washington. I said, you're going to go fast and just, you know, do what you do. And it didn't surprise me how he played. It's not too big for him. It's really not. He's that kind of guy.
Herm Edwards, it's interesting because when guys play that position and have rookie seasons like that, there's a lot of focus the next year on, you know, the run tape, too, to try to stop him. And C.J. Stroud was really good last year, but maybe the expectations we had for C.J. Stroud in year two were a little unfair. A lot of folks out there thought that Houston was going to compete with the Chiefs maybe to come out of the AFC. The Commanders were real good, and then they were on the brink, as you know, of a Super Bowl. What is a reasonable level of expectation in year two for Jaden Daniels?
Well, I think when you look at Washington, they're in a pretty good division, you know, with the reigning Super Bowl champs in there, and they actually beat them. They beat Philadelphia. I would say for Washington, you know, to challenge Philly for the division, I think those are the two best teams, Washington and and the Eagles, and then you can say Dallas or the Giants, but you, the Cowboys are the Cowboys. You know, they're always going to get talked about because they're the Cowboys. But you know, I don't know if you look at the, you don't look at his numbers of Jaden Daniels. I think you look at how he has the ability to win games in big moments, right? And I think that's just his DNA. He knows how to do that. The game's not too big for him. It's always harder your second year because you put so much pressure on yourself as a player. And I can remember that my second year coming into the league. My first year, I started out and I was putting almost too much pressure on myself as a player. And he's going to have to get through that. But other than that, I just think he's in a good organization. They've surrounded him with some good players. And they know they can win. They know they can compete in the NFC East and maybe overtake the Eagles.
Talking to Herm Edwards here on the show. Herm, a lot of folks are tired of the Chiefs, are tired of their dominance. I'm a Bears fan, but I covered that team, and I got to know Clark pretty well. My kids were born there, so I don't mind it. With your history of the Chiefs, do you enjoy watching Kansas City year after year after year after year make a Super Bowl? Or like a lot of football folks out there, would you like to see someone else from the AFC have a crack at that thing?
Well, you're funny. Well, they have a crack at it. But here's the problem. It's a they're dealing with what New England had when they had Captain America and Tom Brady. For you to get to the Super Bowl, you had to go through New England. And now the Chiefs have kind of done that. And people get tired of it. But, you know, it's like anything else. Can Lamar Jackson beat him in the playoffs? Can Joe Burrows beat him in the playoffs? Can Aaron Rodgers with the Pittsburgh Steelers beat him in the playoffs? Right? I mean, or can Herbert beat him in the playoffs? You just go down the list of all the teams. Can Josh Allen beat him in the playoffs? I mean, you got to beat him in the playoffs. And if you don't beat him, they're going to the Super Bowl. And that's no different than New England when they had their run, right? And so that's the team, and that's the guy you got to beat.
Who's I ask this every year of folks like yourself, but I have to keep asking because no one's really done it outside of Joe Burrow once. Who's the best bet to be able to do what you just described?
I think all of them have enough, you know, moxie and talent. They're all the guys I'm talking about, all playoff quarterbacks. It's just a matter of in the moment, you got to do it. They all have, they're all capable of doing it, but you got to go do it. And it's just, that's the whole deal with it. You know, I mean, look, I'm a big, you know, I'm a fan of all the team. I don't just, you know, I love Josh Allen. But you look at the Buffalo Bills, 31 seasons without an appearance in the Super Bowl. The Buffalo Bills. And I can remember when I was with Kansas City, my first year coaching as an assistant coach, that was the team you had to go through. This is when we had Joe Montana and Marcus Allen. That's how far that goes back. And now you look at it, and it's been 31 years since that. And so it goes in cycles sometimes when you get the right head coach, you get the right quarterback, you get the right scenario of a football team. And that's what everybody's dealing with right now when you think about on the AFC side of it going through with Kansas City. You mentioned you're a Chicago fan, and I'm taking it somewhere else. But I said this, watching Caleb Williams play now, oh, boy. Because Caleb Williams has talent. He has the same kind of talent that Jaden Daniels has. He doesn't run as good as Jaden, but throwing a football, he has talent. Now with Ben Johnson, when you watch him, and I get it, it's the preseason, but that's all you can do is watch the preseason because that's all that's happening right now. But when you watch him play the quarterback position, oh boy. I mean, he's a different. If you're a Bears fan, you got to go, whoa, wait a minute now. This guy's really good. He's a good quarterback.
Herm Edwards giving music to my ears here on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm optimistic. I find the NFC North really hard to kind of figure out, Herm, because Detroit lost both their coordinators. You know better than anybody how important that is. New quarterback in Minnesota. I mean, I don't like the Packers, but I respect what they're building, and I like sort of what they can do. And question marks around Chicago. Do you have a sort of confident perspective on who you think comes out of that really interesting division this year?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously Detroit is going to be the favorite, but can they overcome what you just mentioned? You know, they lose both their coordinators, but then can they overcome this? The last game they played, when they went to, you know, when Washington came in there, I mean, the Washington dismantled them at home in the playoffs. Now, you got to that's reality. You got to like, okay, well, how did that happen? Because this was a team, hey, Detroit's going. Everybody, oh, we had the parade already for the Detroit Lions. And they went in there with a rookie quarterback, Jaden Daniels, and it was like, oh, man. What? So they got to get over that now. And as you mentioned, new offensive coordinator. That has a lot to do with the play caller. You know, he's going, all right, I got to call the plays for Jared Goff now. I mean, Jared Goff had a great relationship with Ben, you know, with Ben Johnson. So he's gone. Aaron Glenn was the defensive coordinator. He's gone. So, you know, how you call it, how you play it together offensively and defensively, the match of the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator along with the head coach, you don't understand that until the season starts. The preseason has nothing to do with any of that stuff. It's all fun and games in the preseason. But now when games really count in the regular season, you got to get a flow for those guys so you understand how to call the game.
Longtime NFL head coach, college coach, ESPN NFL analyst, Herm Edwards here on the show. Herm, last one for you. When you're a head coach, everybody's problem is your problem. You're responsible for everything. You're a coach. You're a CEO. You're a locker room manager. You're a man manager. If you're in a situation where, say, the Cowboys are in, where one of your star players and your owner are crossways, or even what's going on with the Bengals, where one of your best defensive players just isn't able to come to an agreement with the organization, do you have to handle the locker room and the rest of the guys a certain way as that drama is playing out with one of the best guys on the team and there's questions about when, if they're going to return?
Yeah, and you got to handle it in a way where you're always open with the players. I had to do this with Larry Johnson when he was holding out when I was in Kansas City. And the thing I did every day is I talked to Larry, just tell him to get in shape. I said, well, this thing's going to get done. And I didn't get involved in numbers or I didn't get involved in that. And I went to the team and told the team, I said, look, he's our teammate. He's going to be here. And all this negotiation stuff, when they ask you, it's not your business. That's the business side of football. And hopefully you guys will be in this situation one day. You'll be a good enough player where you'll sit in this situation where maybe your contract's not done yet, but he's going to be here. And when he comes here, we're going to love him to death, and that's how we're going to roll. And once you address the team that way, you take all that away from the locker room. The players don't even have to talk about it because the players don't want to talk about it, right? They really don't. But the media wants to talk about it. Well, how do you feel about this? And I told the players, that's not your job to talk about that. It's my job. Organization's job. That's business. Don't worry about business. You just talk about football. And he's going to be here. And Larry eventually got into camp and, you know, things worked out. And I think these guys that are going through it right now, it's going to all work out. That's just part of the profession now of the NFL.
I mean, big-time money leads to big-time disagreement sometimes in any walk of life, including the NFL. Herm Edwards, it's good to hear your voice again. It's good to talk to you, man, almost 20 years later. Thank you for making time.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you for allowing me to be on.
Appreciate you. Herm Edwards, ESPN NFL analyst, host of Herm's Game Plan, where he breaks down the latest news in the National Football League. 8-year NFL head coach with the Jets and the Chiefs. I got to know him in Kansas City a little bit. A head coach at Arizona State for many years. Jaden Daniels overlapped with him for 3 on X at Herm Edwards. And here's the thing about Herm Edwards, and this was my first experience with a head coach in the NFL. So I thought this was normal. It wasn't. Incredibly kind guy, like a good guy. And Ryan, it turns out they're not all good guys. Because they're stressed. Maybe Herm was such a nice guy.
That's good. That helps. I mean, as Bill Belichick's shown, being mean is maybe a way to success, but it was rude for the nice guys.
It was the way to Jordan Tart. I think Belichick's not. You think Bill's mean?
He's mean. He puts on a front to the media.
He does.
Deep down he's a nice guy, but he views the media as basically trying to detract from doing his job.
What do you think Herm, I want to be respectful, so I didn't bring this up. What do you think he would have been more inclined to talk about? Me stalking him unsuccessfully at his home after he got fired, or you play to win the game?
Probably, he probably gets heard about it all the time.
Yeah.
I think he'd definitely be more intrigued by you stalking him. I think he'd want some answers and maybe, you know, maybe some philosophy of why you're tasked to do that. So I think that
I want some answers. I want to know where he was. He wasn't at his house.
Do you think
where
he knew he? You were there and kind of did, you know, a family member do a drive by?
It's definitely possible because neighbors were like, "What is this guy doing here?" I was in the hallway for like an hour and a half, just outside his door, just occasionally knocking.
Hanging.
I mean, my job was to try to get a comment. He'd been fired. And the thing is, I did not love the GM, Carl Peterson. And I liked Herm. So I think I was probably also viewed as someone who had a sort of side like, Herm didn't know me well, but he liked me in our interactions. So I think I was probably viewed as a better emissary of that than some of the beat guys.
Did you have any expectation going in of like, all right, I'm going to do this. He's going to talk to me. He's going to be open.
I was like, I hope he's not home. If I'm being honest. I was so glad he wasn't home. I was so glad.
I'm out of here.
All right. But I hung out there for a long time.
What'd you do?
I don't know, man. I just was bored.
It's like, that's like before cell phones, like where you just like scroll. Like,
I mean, I had cell phones, but there was no scroll. Right, there was no scroll. I probably texted my wife, can you believe this? What's for dinner when I get home? I'm hungry. Man. Nice guy. Herm Edwards. Great, great dude. All right, let's do a little buy or sell. I've never seen anything like this. There was a meltdown in sports unlike anything we've ever seen, and we're going to get into that in a moment. Next on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Cheer the F up, man, exclamation point.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, well, that was funny. Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you on this Monday here on the Infinity Sports Network. Remember, you can always get the podcast version of the show or listen live on the free Odyssey app. Man, there was a crazy, crazy meltdown over the weekend, and we are going to delve into that and other topics in Buy or Sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
What's funny is I feel like there are two stories that kind of fit into this meltdown. So we'll start with one now and do one a little bit later on.
I love it.
We'll start with college football.
All right. I forgot about this one.
This could definitely be categorized as a meltdown.
Multiple meltdowns, you're right.
So Kansas State lost to Iowa State in Dublin 24-21. K-State's quarterback Avery Johnson played pretty well, but still, again, K-State lost. The problem was for Avery Johnson and his family, after the game, there was a video circling the internet where his father and his brother were fighting each other in the parking lot after the game.
Real fight, too.
Real fight. The father had the son pinned down on the ground, people on top of him trying to rip him off his son, threw a punch at his son's head before eventually they were separated. Now, the next day, the family put out a joint statement apologizing for the fight, saying that constant bickering led to this explosion and they vowed to be better going forward. Buy or sell, Bill. Family members fighting each other is acceptable.
Oh, sell.
Sell.
You can't be throwing fists against your family anywhere, but especially in public. Buy or sell, Dana White should attempt to sell tickets to that family Thanksgiving.
Buy.
What do you think was... like, how do you
I
get
don't
to
know.
The point?
I mean, I have some speculation, but I don't want to... I don't know.
Is it a situation where one of the family members is basically bad-mouthing either his own son or own brother, and the other's trying to defend him, saying he didn't play that bad, it's not his fault?
I mean, it could be anything. There are a lot of factors that could be a play here. It is inexplicable. And if you're this poor, the actual quarterback, you just lost this game and you played pretty well, but it didn't go the way you wanted, and you got to fly all the way home, and you're probably still jet-lagged, and... how do you think he gets the news? You think he sees it on his phone? You think someone will give, like, think a coach gives him a heads up? Hey, man, your dad and your brother just beat the crap out of each other in the parking lot? How do you get the message on that?
I hate to say it. It's probably you log on. I mean, I don't. Maybe he just is smart enough to not go on Twitter after a loss, because even though he played well, people are just not sane. But, like, I mean, that thing spread like wildfire quickly after the game. So
I will say this. I buy or sell that, like me, when you saw it, you thought, AI.
Sell.
I thought it was fake.
I thought it was more a misidentification than, like, just this, like, fake fight. But, like, I didn't think it was real.
Or a lie.
Not buy initially, right, that this is his father and his brother fighting.
I say AI. I mean more, yeah, that or I thought, okay, this is a fight from 4 years ago involving two strangers and people are just making it up and it's going viral.
Right. So many different ways to dad and the brother make it fake or not real.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
So the brother lost the fight.
Big time. At least from what we saw. He was pinned on the ground. His dad threw a punch in his head. I mean, I'm assuming the guy on top usually wins, right?
So you might be able to say that those siblings both lost their battles.
Bye.
It was a bad day to be K-State on and off the field, I guess.
Buy or sell, it would have been okay when the dad was winning the fight for him to say, who's your daddy?
Bye.
Okay. Instead of saying uncle, you got to say daddy. Daddy, please. Let's stay with football, Bill. Okay. In the preseason finale for the Cowboys on Friday night, Micah Parsons was seen lying on a trainer's table during the game in the third quarter, and Parsons received criticism for seemingly being so checked out, and Brian Schottenheimer, their head coach, actually said on Saturday he will have a chat with Parsons about his body language. Buy or sell, Micah Parsons was in the wrong for visibly being checked out.
I think buy, right? I think
buy.
Look, I don't know where you come down on this. Right or wrong, I have become 100% team Micah Parsons, which is unusual for me because I'm normally like, live out your contract. But Jerry has just handled this in such an unprofessional way. I have worked for really bad people. I have worked for really bad bosses. I've been assigned people to work with. I don't mean bad colleagues in the sense they're bad at their jobs. I mean, I've worked with bad human beings. And what I think you kind of learn is you can't let yourself be lowered to that level no matter how frustrated you are. And I think in this case, in a small way, Micah Parsons let himself go down to that unprofessional Jerry Jones level. Hold your head high, be a pro, don't give them any way to sort of come at you as you deal with people who unscrupulous I don't think is too far to describe how the Cowboys have handled the situation with Micah Parsons, but in this exact situation, it's a bad look for the player.
Here's a good look, somewhat. Your boy Caleb Williams, who on Friday night had a pretty solid outing against the Chiefs, going 11-15 for 113 passing yards and one touchdown. He played just the first half. Despite, what would you say, a positive box score, take a listen to Ben Johnson, his thoughts on the offense after the game.
It is disappointing to me, offensively for sure, because I thought that we'd kind of worked our way out of that. I'm still learning this group as well.
Buy or sell? You like Ben Johnson's coaching philosophy?
So I don't know, because I am obviously a Bears fan who is sort of emotionally tied in knots on this whole thing. I go back and forth between optimism and pessimism, and there's not enough information to know how Caleb Williams is taking this. Whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to lean into optimism and buy.
Buy.
Honestly, the proof's going to be in the first three or four games. If the offense looks effective, if they're winning football games, if they're moving the ball. You just heard Herm Edwards say that he thinks Caleb Williams is every bit as talented as Jaden Daniels. That is then on the Bears, and that's Ben Johnson, to put him in a position to be successful. And the problem becomes that kind of talent doesn't guarantee success. See Trevor Lawrence. See a lot of quarterbacks who have come into the National Football League. So I hope so, but I just don't think you can glean a lot from a press conference or even a preseason game on that front.
The first domino of the Browns quarterback room fell yesterday as the team announced that they have cut quarterback Tyler Huntley. Now, Huntley was recently signed as a body with Shador, Dillon Gabriel, and Kenny Pickett, all suffering injuries throughout training camp. The Browns now have four quarterbacks left on their roster, which is important because their general manager, Andrew Berry, has said openly before he's willing to keep all four QBs on the active roster. So, Bill, with cutdown day tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern, buy or sell, Shador Sanders is a lock to make the Cleveland Browns roster.
Man. I'm going to sell that he's a lock.
Sell.
I think he'll make the roster. I just thought of something I should have thought of sooner. Buy or sell some of the over-the-top hand-wringing and accusations that Kevin Stefanski is out to get Shador Sanders was done in part by people who want to make it so that they can't cut Shador. Because think about what the reaction is going to be if they actually cut him. And they would put him on the practice squad, but think about what that would look like if a fourth string quarterback drafted in the fifth round has people have this reaction because he didn't get to have get the reps of the first quarterback, first team reps in a preseason game. What's the reaction going to be if they understandably make the decision? You know what? We don't want four quarterbacks. People are going to freak out. I'm going to buy my own question. Yeah.
That is interesting. It almost does work kind of both ways. Where like a celebrity, you could argue in one way hurts him, but in the other, right? If you're the Browns, you could right. It's a Tyler Huntley just was cut yesterday. No one blinked an eye. Shedeur Sanders is cut tomorrow or today. The world's on fire.
The whole show will be about it tomorrow. Yes. Gladly. I hope they cut him, and I want him to succeed because it's going to be something great to talk about.
It is crazy. I think that goes back to what you said about Jason Lloyd and his tweet. Reason why third and other teams really did not want anything to do with it, because whether he plays good, plays bad, playing or not playing, something's always a story. And it's always some sort of distraction as well.
Really good point. Yep.
So the Browns are trying to figure out their quarterback room. At least they do have a starter, though, for week one, Joe Flacco. A team that right now has no idea who's starting a game for them less than 2 weeks, the New Orleans Saints. Clearly for head coach Kellen Moore, three preseason games were not enough. He is still yet to name a starting quarterback, as Spencer Rattler, who was there last year, Tyler Shuck, their second-round pick in this most recent draft, are battling it out. Neither so far have separated. Again, that season opener for New Orleans, 2 weeks from yesterday, they host the Arizona Cardinals. Buy or sell, Bill, the Saints will have at least three different starting quarterbacks this season.
Buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell. Just buy or sell. The Saints should have drafted Shedeur Sanders.
Buy.
You know what? I'm going to buy, too.
Buy.
Are you saying along with Tyler Shuck or instead of Tyler Shuck?
Instead of. Instead.
Buy.
Yeah. Look, part of the problem for Shedeur, it's not the only problem, is there aren't that many places. Even if, let's say the Browns don't keep him, right? There aren't that many places that even make sense for him to go right now. That will change as people get injured. Because I think the ideal spot for him is the number two quarterback, understanding he's not going to start, training under someone, learning the game, being in the quarterback room with a good QB. And so that probably requires, I mean, how does a backup quarterback get injured? That probably requires a starter on a bad team to get hurt. A backup, or maybe a good team if they have a good backup, a backup to take the starting job, and then that's okay, we'll give Shedeur. There's just not a lot of spots for him is what I'm saying. New Orleans is one of them.
And you would think, right? And for a team to take him on, you probably need your starting quarterback like well entrenched, so there's no like controversy if Shedeur be starting or not. Like if he goes to Buffalo, it's Josh Allen's a quarterback. But,
right.
Like to your point, like it's still if he's going to be at best second string, most likely third string for most of the season. How much development can you do? And is the reward greater than with all the circus you have to deal with? Is it worth it? I don't know.
I mean, can you think of another place other than the Saints where it's reasonable Shedeur could go and maybe be the starter by the end of the year or get some opportunities? I can't think of anywhere. Maybe the Raiders? I doubt it, though.
I mean, the Colts would be an example just because I don't think anyone trusts Daniel Jones play-wise or health-wise. And clearly, Anthony Richardson is not there, but like...
But you have to have Anthony Richardson to be your... I mean, if Daniel Jones goes to... Right? Like,
you can't... But it's an opportunity for him to play. Like, if he go, like, could he beat out Anthony Richardson, fly up? Possibly, yeah.
If he could beat out Anthony Richardson needs to do something else for a living. Not because of talent level, though, maybe that. Just because he was still a top pick for them, right? Yeah. All right, that's one. That's a good one.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Speaking of oh, boy, how about this in tennis yesterday, Bill? The U.S. Open is underway. Yeah. Daniil Medvedev was facing match point when, inexplicably, a cameraman walked onto the court, causing a distraction. Now, his opponent served for the win and was given a second serve because of this distraction. Medvedev had a giant meltdown, even asked the chair umpire, "Are you a man?" as he was protesting the allowance of the second serve. Eventually, fought back, got it to a fifth set, lost. Buy or sell, this reaction by Daniil Medvedev warranted.
Sell. That was sell. And it, I mean, also, it was a six-minute delay, and then the poor dude was trying to beat him, double-faulted on match point. So then then Medvedev won, and then he won the next two sets, but then the other guy somehow won. The fifth set, it was the craziest, most inappropriate. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
Are chair umpires able to, like, kick people? Like, you know, like, umpires can eject people?
Yeah. You can do point penalties, right? So you have to work your way up to it, I believe. But, you have to have a lot of courage to do that because they did it to Serena once, and it's still a big controversy years ago. But they could have said to him, you will go back there now. You have 10 seconds, or it's a point penalty, which means he loses a point. If he lost a point, he loses the match because it was match point. But the thing is, Medvedev is a hothead, would have dared him to do it. So the guy would have had to have made good on it.
Asking, are you a man? That's pretty disrespectful. So it's supposed to be, right? If you show reverence to chair umpire, umpire, referee. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Let's finish here, Bill. Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh made history yesterday. He swatted his 49th homer of the season, setting a new single-season home run record by a catcher, surpassing the Royal Salvador Perez. Now, while Raleigh right now leads the majors in homers, leads the AL in RBIs, he is still second in terms of betting odds to Aaron Judge for the AL MVP. Now, unfortunately, the 400 tracker is very much dead, but Judge still very hitting a respectable 324 on the season. Now, we look at the standings. Both teams right now, Yankees and Mariners, do hold the last two wild card spots. Yankees right now a half game up on the Mariners at second wild card spot. Buy or sell, assuming both stay healthy and stay consistent, okay, the AL MVP should come down to which team finishes higher in the standings.
Are you saying that the stats are basically the same?
Like, if they both stay on this trajectory that they're on right now, so Raleigh finishes, I don't know, it would be like 55 homers, 56 homers. Judge still is, hitting 330 on the year. Raleigh leads, the AL in RBIs. Like, a lot of the stuff he's doing now, he's leading. Still, though, second, at least in betting markets, to Judge. Right. So it's not moving the needle.
Here's what I'm going to say.
Sell.
The answer's going to be the same. But if the Mariners... Dude, if they somehow keep what they're doing and win their, if they have like an actually successful season on the back of this dude's individual offensive performance, he should be the MVP because that is value against the behemoth that is the Yankees. But barring that, for me, it's Aaron Judge. But I would give him real consideration if the Mariners can overachieve at the end of the year, if they finish as a ridiculous overachiever.
Look, half game back with a month to go there, right there.
They can do it. I mean, the problem is, half a game back if you're the Yankees, you're probably going to win the division. Half a game back if you're the Mariners, you're just kind of waiting for the wheels to come off.
Load up at the deadline, good pitching. Cal Raleigh's,
they're in it, man.
Not slowing down at all. I mean, he could get to 60 home runs maybe if he has a big time September. It's crazy.
100%. And he's fun to watch.
The big dumper.
We have a closeness thing. It's a little radio joke for you there. Let's talk a little more football and a little more Shador after we get a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, one of the NFL's main hold-ins has reportedly ended. The Commanders and wideout Terry McLaurin said to be in agreement on a 3-year extension of max value $96 million. McLaurin now signed through 2028. Meanwhile, the contract fight continues for Micah Parsons in Dallas and Trey Hendrickson in Cincinnati. On a lesser scale, the Saints are releasing veteran running back Cam Akers as teams continue to cut down to 53-man rosters by tomorrow afternoon's deadline. Michigan will officially name stud freshman Bryce Underwood as starting QB today, and Kentucky's expected to go with seventh-year senior Zach Calzada, the Wildcats' his fourth team following Texas A&M, Auburn, and Incarnate Word. The Yankees avoided a 4-game sweep and snap an 8-game skid head-to-head with a 7-2 win over the Red Sox last night. Trent Grisham and Jazz Chisholm each went deep for the Bombers. Breanna Stewart slated to return tonight when the Liberty host the Sun. Stewart has missed a month with a bone bruise to her right knee. And day two of the U.S. Open a few minutes old. Madison Keys about to play on Arthur Ashe Stadium. Venus Williams and Carlos Alcaraz play there tonight. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on Writer Than You. We've got some breaking news.
Breaking news.
Hit me, Ryan.
Terry McLaurin, according to many NFL insiders, including Ian Rappaport, has signed a 3-year, $96 million contract extension with, of course, the Washington Commanders. A $32 million a year average ties him with A.J. Brown as the sixth highest paid wide receiver in the NFL moving forward.
We don't have a drop that says obnoxious alert. But if we did, you would play it here. Because I won't say I don't care. I care. This was inevitable. Remember, you and I have discussed a few times, should we be talking more about this? And my thing was, not really. He's going to sign a deal. It's going to be in line with what his market value is. This is about right. Look, what's going on with Micah Parsons, and you and I were just discussing this, in a normal circumstance, I would say there's a 99% chance that the deal will get done, right? It might be 3 hours before the first game, the deal will get done. I think you and I disagree on this. I think it's more 51%, 49%. I think it's a coin flip. And you made the point that, what, Jerry's got to do it, right? Jerry's got to buckle. The problem is, and you're not wrong as a rational actor, but when owners get weird on stuff, if you presume, and I do, that the Browns owner is the reason Shador's there, it wasn't rational to draft a second quarterback 2 rounds after you drafted Dylan Gabriel, but owners sometimes do what they want to do. That's speculative. We don't know that for sure, but that's certainly been suggested by reporting in Cleveland. I don't have to speculate that Jerry's been toxic or has described a toxic relationship with the agent of Micah Parsons. I don't have to speculate that Jerry's ego is a part of this. I don't have to speculate that Jerry has said, I'm not doing it. This is it. The deal's done. The negotiation's over. He said that. And so that's a lot of pride for an older, grumpier, stubborn, cares what the world kind of thinks owner to swallow if he gives Micah Parsons a deal. McLaurin getting a deal makes all the sense in the world. Good for him. Good for them. Try to pick up where you were last year where you had a magical season, but you want to go further, obviously, than an NFC championship game. To me, Parsons is the bigger story. This was always inevitable. The only surprise it got done this early, frankly.
Early? See, I guess my only thing is, why go through all training camp in a big year with a young quarterback and not have his number one receiver out there if you kind of, like I said, it was always when, not if. Why drag it out?
I mean, but lately, and this, a lot of these are the Cowboys, we've seen deals get done week of, day of.
Yes.
That's kind of the new standard, more Dallas, but... Because I think that the only thing, this is true right in the markets too, the only thing more powerful than greed is fear. And so the closer you get to these deadlines, the more the player's worried about playing, the team's worried about him not being out there. I think in the beginning, the greed from each side has them go, whatever, he's not playing with the team, he's not working with the guys, they're not getting a rhythm, who cares? Then the fear that it's going to catch up to them maybe hits both of them. That is my theory. And also, I don't know what it is. I'm not built like this. I don't understand why many people, for like the reality of their human nature, is put everything to the last minute. My wife, who is not listening to this because she's a librarian and she's working, so she can't hear this, puts everything to the last minute. Everything. And there are just some people built that way. I don't. Are you a last minute guy?
I don't want to be, but especially when it comes to like packing, every time I'm going to get early, pack early, get my clothes set, and it's like
the day before.
I'm leaving 2 hours before my, I may also start packing.
Oh, I pack the day before.
Wow.
I'm also a professional packer because of all my travel. I can pack twice the suitcase of anybody else.
Really?
My wife and kids pack their stuff, and then I go back and I repack it, and there's twice as much room, and then I put more of my stuff in there if I want it. And they had their crack at it. The Shador thing is going to be fascinating in what is basically the next 28 hours and 9 minutes, if I did the math right here. I think, my prediction, let's do prediction time. I think that they're going to keep four quarterbacks on the roster. The thing is, and Herm Edwards said this, if you're going to keep Kenny Pickett, who hasn't really been able to do anything, but I think they view him as their actual backup. So let's just presume you're keeping Kenny Pickett, which you are. I think they are. You're keeping three quarterbacks, and all three of those quarterbacks are not named Shador Sanders. And so to keep Shador, he has to be the fourth on that roster. I think they're going to keep him, but it's 85-15 for me. It's not 99% certainty. I'm 85% confident they will keep him. I also think that it's easier to cut him another time than now. There's nothing going on. He's making tons of news. Maybe it's easier to do what you got to do with him later in the season as other storylines take over and people... Because once the football starts, we're all going to be focused on the actual football. And it might somewhat bring down and reduce the noise surrounding Shedeur Sanders.
And to your point, God forbid, but injuries do happen. If you're in season week three, your left tackle goes down, your linebacker goes down, a corner goes down. If you need a roster spot.
100% right.
You know, it's easier to justify than just randomly cutting him today, if you will.
That's going to happen. Right. Guys are going to get hurt in the National Football League. I mean, Shadur's best chance to really be on this team is for them to decide to keep him as a fourth quarterback and then for one of the quarterbacks to get injured. And then that's almost certainly the guy starting. Not that you want to root for Joe Flacco to get hurt, but because it's quarterback gets injured, all right, you got a spot for Shadur. Anyone else on the roster gets injured, to your point, sorry, Shadur, sorry, man, you're out. I'm not sure it's the worst thing in the world for him. It depends where he could land. The Browns are not exactly historical stewards of people's careers.
Also, really quick, how many reps, if he's on the team and there's four quarterbacks, how many reps is he getting in practice?
None. He's not going to get any.
The third stringers barely practice. What's a fourth stringer going to do?
Are they going to have him be... dude, I don't know. Yeah, it's bad.
Maybe, yeah, for him, going somewhere else is better for his career at this point.
I think it might be. But it won't be received that way. The problem is, it might be in everyone's best interest for him to go somewhere else, but the Browns may not want to take the hit from the craziness out there. That is, show's over. I got to go. Don't have to go home, but can't stay here. Thank you for listening. I'm Bill Ryder. Have a great day. We'll see you here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.